Hello and welcome to another edition of Little Atoms, the radio show about ideas, with me, Neil Denny, and with Padre Greedy. Little Atoms is based around ideas of the Enlightenment and actively promotes science, freedom of expression, scepticism, and secular humanism. This, of course, means we often end up discussing the antithesis of these ideas, things like superstition, religious fundamentalism, censorship, and conspiracy theory. Our guests bring ideas that are challenging, sometimes controversial, often polemical, but always interesting. And although, yes, it is still only September, there's a Christmas theme to tonight's show, because we're going to be talking about the launch on the 1st of October of The Atheist's Guide to Christmas, a book edited by Ariane Shireen. The Atheist's Guide to Christmas features 42 contributions from the world's most entertaining atheist scientists, comedians, philosophers, writers, and journalists, some of which include Richard Dawkins, Darren Brown, Charlie Brooker, David Baddiel, Ben Goldacre, Josie Long, Richard Herring, Simon Singh, Brian Cox, Anthony Grayling, Simon Le Bon, Robin Ince, Natalie Haynes, Phil Plait, Lucy Porter, and Adam Rutherford, and Little Atom's own Neil Denny. Tonight we're joined by three old friends of the show, the editor of the book, Ariane Shireen, and contributors Natalie Haynes and Josie Long. And we'll begin by discussing the genesis, if that's entirely an appropriate word, of the book. Ariane, you should probably start by telling us how the book came about.
Well, we only aimed to raise £5,500 for the Atheist Plus campaign. And due to the brilliant generosity of atheists, we ended up raising over £150,000. And a lot of people said that the extra funds should go to charity. And we couldn't actually give them to charity because legally we were obliged to use them for the purpose for which they were donated. But I did think it would be really nice to do something for charity as part of the campaign. So in February, when I got the chance to possibly write a book, the idea of writing a book myself was very daunting, and I thought that do a much better job if I handed it over to lots of other people. And also,
I wish I'd done that with my book now. It's saved me ages. I'm working really hard.
Oh, but no, I think it was the right decision because it's so much better a book than I could ever produce by myself, and I got to work with lots of brilliant people, and it's for a great cause. And we were trying to choose a charity, and given some of the things that the Pope has said this year, I don't know if you can remember what they were, but they're quite memorable. I thought it would be really nice to do it for THT. So they provide advice, legal support, emotional support, testing, medical advice to people living with HIV in the UK.
So that's how you go about editing a book. What does that actually mean? You know, what work is involved in getting the stuff together?
Well, first off, I made a kind of wish list of all the atheists that I'd love to be involved with it, all my favourite atheists. I remember a few days after, no, actually the day after the meeting with my publisher, where we kind of discussed it, and I said, well, I'll get a few names together, was the NSS Awards, the National Secular Society Awards, and Richard Dawkins and Ben Goldacre were there. So I asked them both, and they both said yes, which was great. And I also called Charlie Brooker and asked him, and he said yes. So I was able to go back the next week and say, we've got these three brilliant writers on board, and then had to put together a proposal, so what's going to be in the book? And so it was a bit odd, really, because I had to make up this list of names of people I hadn't actually asked, who hadn't said yes at all, and I was intending to ask them. And if they did say yes, then this is what they'd write about. So it was quite presumptuous, really. But it sort of did work out, so that was great. And then they said, great, we'd like to commission it, and it all kind of went on from there, and then I had to find a charity. And I think Josie, I asked you in March, and then you were in Australia.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So Josie, what have you written?
I wrote an article. What I wanted to do was to write an article that was about how much I love Christmas, and about just taking the festivity element and doing it in a secular way, but also sort of enjoying, just harvesting what you can enjoy without having to feel obliged to, you know, have any God in it. And I also wanted to just have a lot of, recommend a lot of silly games and silly things you can do. So mine is called Things to Make and Do at Christmas, and it's kind of trying to jimmy people into making things and setting up their own silly traditions and just having a bit more of a laugh, but, you know, not being too twee.
So what would be your ideal atheist Christmas? How would that work?
My ideal atheist Christmas would be really boisterous, because I don't really spend Christmas with my family, and I haven't done for a long time. And I tell you what I do. I come from a family that's divorced, so I've got... It's always been too hard to negotiate spending Christmas with one or the other. Mm. So basically, ever since I was a teenager, I've sort of not. And as a result, I've tried to make my own one with friends, and it's always hard because everyone did come to their parents.
Yeah.
And my ideal Christmas would be really boisterous, full of friends, full of my own family that doesn't exist yet, so it's going to be like 20 years. But it would be the celebratory element, like big meals, lots of games, lots of participation, lots of homemade things, but not in a sort of, just in sort of really taking control of it and using your imagination a lot, and sort of putting your own personal stamp on it and really appreciating the fact that you've only got this one life, and every year you can build a thing that's your own festivities. And also, I like carols a lot. There'd be a lot of carol singing. I love carols. I think they're brilliant. And there'd probably be a little bit of going to church, which I appreciate is kind of anti-message, but carol services are great, and I'm sorry, I was brought up by a very religious family, so there's certain bits of religion I can still enjoy just for the sake of it. What else would there be? There'd be a lot of silly games. That's my main element. A lot of game playing.
So Natalie, what have you contributed to this?
I guess Josie, in a way, I am a huge fan of Christmas, and people don't expect it of you when you are, in a way, perhaps, like Josie, I don't really consider myself an atheist. I consider it a sort of faith position, I suppose, atheism, that you're kind of saying, well, right, I know this to be true. I know there to not be a God. You know, well, I don't. I'm a Platonist on this. I think that knowledge is whatever true belief tethered by reason, and I'm prepared to allow the true belief that the reason I do not have. So I guess I would be agnostic, but I see why they wouldn't bring out a guide to that, because people go, oh, you agnostics, you're like, oh, should I have it in the red or the blue? Well, I'll have both. And you're like, no, you're just failing to understand the whole point of it, which is that there are some categories of knowledge which, never mind, doesn't matter, dull. So I kind of came into it going, well, I really want to talk about just how much I like Christmas and lots of things. I think rituals are what make Christmas Christmas, whether you are religious or irreligious. And we tend to do the same things year on year for Christmas. You know, people have these... Whenever you start dating somebody, you always know that that's where... It's one of those places where you will clash, because people have this kind of... Well, we always open our presents on Christmas Eve. You go, what? You deviants! We open ours on Christmas morning. Well, on Christmas morning, we'll be at church. What? And so on. And I suppose I've always had quite a deviant Christmas, because I've been vegetarian for 20-something years. So the whole turkey cranberry sauce thing has never been in my Christmas, or not for an awfully long time. And I quite like that. I quite like the fact that you can create, like Josie says, you can create your own version of how Christmas should be every year. And also, I think lots of people forget that, you know, some of the kind of ultimate texts of Christmas, like Christmas Carol, are very godless. You know, it's full of ghosts, that's for sure. And yet, it is not...
Ghosts are completely ungodless. Ghosts are completely unchristian.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have ghosts. It's not Christian.
The Holy Ghost.
Doesn't it? That is a whole other kettle.
He's a whole different kind of ghost.
He's the one special ghost you're allowed. He's the exception that proves everyone.
There's no ghost rule.
Let him in, but nobody else.
That's true. They shouldn't be floating around. They should be in one place or the other, or in the middle, but not hang around us, should they? Without asking a really stupid question, I am going to ask a really stupid question. What do vegetarians have for Christmas
Day? Oh, I'm glad you asked. So, last year, it was really nice, actually. I did a very nice leek and apple sort of savoury crumble thing, and I had chestnuts in and cranberries, and it was really, really...
So
it's
still
really
quite Christmassy.
That's
pretty
nice.
Oh, yeah, you go badass Christmas, because people always go, oh, yeah, if you've got vegetarians coming, why not do them a Thai curry? Because of fowl with roast potatoes is the short answer. So, do you have any other questions? So, what you try and do is make a food that substitutes well, so you can keep the things that you want.
Yeah.
Roast potatoes, broccoli, and like, I'm fond of broccoli, and gravy and stuffing, and all the things that other people would have, while simultaneously not eating meat. It is easy. So, yeah, chestnuts are a staple part of the vegetarian Christmas diet.
Because people, every single year, I think it was in the royal family, there's a kind of joke about every year people complain that they don't really like turkey, and then someone says we won't have turkey next year.
It's baffling.
And then, oh, we have to have turkey.
It's
like,
baffling. Every year people go, oh yeah, turkey, this is how you cook it. For months magazines say, oh, this is how you cook it so it's not dry. Or alternatively, you have something
else
that's not default setting, horrible.
I like turkey. That is slanderous.
I like turkey.
It's not slanderous.
I'm a fan of turkey.
It is.
No, put a bit of bacon on it.
Do you know what I cooked? Make it any better in my house.
I would like to say what I cooked last Christmas because it was amazing. It was a goose stuffed with chicken, stuffed with guinea fowl. I didn't do all the spatchcocking and all that. No, I bought it, but it weighed about 3 stone, right? It was a goose stuffed with chicken, stuffed with a guinea fowl, stuffed with, I think, maybe pheasant or partridge, and then had wild boar sausage. It was the most glorious thing I've ever eaten. It had loads of different skins in it as well. It was amazing.
Can I come to your house this Christmas?
Yes. Well, no, I'm going to France. We had bacon wrapped around halloumi, dates, and sausages. That is 3 different types of things in blankets.
That's 3 different types of protein.
It was amazing. I put on 5 pounds that I didn't lose. It just went on and on. It got bigger and bigger.
No, this is an important part of Christmas, isn't it? That kind of
the overindulgence,
midwinter indulgence.
But hedonism is crucial, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's sort of, because, and maybe it's because the word atheist is like a negation, that you're the opposite of a theist, and so it gives you that idea of straight away, like an ascetic.
Yeah.
It gives you that idea of deprivation, self-denial, straight off. Okay, but why shouldn't you be a hedonist and simultaneously not necessarily believe in all kinds of, what? Who made that rule? And I don't really understand it.
That's why I like being a humanist.
Yeah.
I love saying humanist.
Or an Epicurean.
So cuddly.
Yeah.
Oh, or a bon vivant. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not religious, I'm a bon vivant.
You're listening to Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas with Padre Greedy and me, Neil Denny. And tonight we're talking to Ariane Shireen, Natalie Haynes and Josie Long about the launch of The Atheist Guide to Christmas. Natalie's already raised this idea, but I wanted to talk about this idea. The book is, you know, called The Atheist Guide to Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and it says very, you know, and this is obviously true because it says it in print on the book, you know, 42 atheists, celebrities, comedians, scientists,
mm-hmm.
etc. So I was going to talk about this thing, you know, this whole thing about agnosticism versus atheism, and people will say, as Natalie has just done, that atheism is itself basically a faith position.
Oh, I would take no, definitely not.
So, Ariane, go on then. Why would you disagree?
I reckon everybody in the book is an atheist, even if they're not. No, well, Josie's contribution starts. My name is Josie Long, and I am an atheist. So that's fairly clear quite that one. I don't think mine is in doubt. But with Natalie, I think that the definition of atheism, specifically, I would say, is living your life without God, without reference to God. So in
it isn't, is it? The definition of atheism is not believing in God,
mm-mm.
or specifically believing that there isn't one.
No, I mean, in the God illusion, for instance,
definitions from the God's dictionary.
Well, I would say that the vast, vast majority of atheists, so I would say that 99% of atheists I've ever met are happy to say there's almost certainly no God, and are happy to allow for a tiny, tiny proportion of a margin of error. So that's the scientific position. It's only scientific to say, okay, I can't prove a negative. I can't say that there is no God, and that's why there's probably no God in the front of the book. Richard Dawkins would have preferred there's almost certainly, but when you have a large proportion of atheists basically saying that they're happy to accept an element of doubt, I think that has to be factored in. As you say, agnosticism is basically sits on the fence. It's 50-50.
But of course it isn't. That's
mm-hmm.
really...
Yeah, that's the dictionary definition.
No, it isn't.
Definitely.
For one, you don't have a dictionary which says it's basically sitting on the fence. You
do
have a dictionary that says, you have a dictionary, frankly, for children.
You have not seen my dictionary.
Agnosticism means to accept that something's not necessarily knowable. And that's it. It's Greek. from gignosko, meaning to recognise or understand or know. To not know is a perfectly good position. It's not at all the same thing as saying, oh, there might be a God, there might not be a God, I'm hedging my bets. It's just an incredibly
But I think
ignorant
the more
betrayal.
The more kind of the atheist argument would be, the sanctifying atheist argument would be, that how many other positions, apart from the big God question, is anyone agnostic about, or is anyone willing to define themselves agnostic about happily? And do we see that as a defensible position?
Yeah, agnostic too, huh?
Well, but I think a lot of people think that me for example would think that it becomes a point where of if we were to adopt an agnostic position on this one point, I don't know whether it is or isn't. How many questions can we adopt this position on, and does that lead to
but
some kind of complete
I don't
stasis?
Think the agnostic point is, I don't know whether it is or it isn't. I think the agnostic point is, and I think this mistake gets made all the time. I think the agnostic position is, I don't think that category of information is something you can know or not know. It's not whether or not I think this or that. It's the fact that I think that kind of information isn't something you can say, right, well, there's definitely this, there's definitely not this. Because how can you possibly state that?
Okay, so are there any
answers that you can't?
Are there any other areas apart from the supernatural where people really, you know, people will take agnosticism as an actual philosophical standpoint?
But I would say even more than that, you know, is this not just an argument that's semantic in the same way that we talk about, you know, science, and we'll talk about, you know, the theory of evolution, and we go, well, you know, ultimately the evolution is a theory, because in science a theory means this particular thing, and creationists will go, oh, it's just a theory. But we know that the you know, the position is that ultimately it's never going to be 100% proved, but it's 99.999%, but we say this is the theory, whereas we all know what we're talking about. We all know that this is the truth, this is the thing. And I would, you know, my position on this thing is that, the Bible and God and everything is fiction, in that, you know, it's myths that were once written by people, therefore it's like, you know, it's a work of literature. And it seems odd to me to be sort of agnostic about God, but not agnostic about, you know, it would be ridiculous of me to say, well, I'm agnostic about Gandalf or something. And that's the bit I don't get. I don't understand why there's this one particular area of what I think of literature where we.
But it isn't just literature, it's also history. I mean, we know that Christ existed, whether you think of him as being the Son of God or not.
No, sure, that's
absolutely
true.
But we definitely know that there's him, right? We get him in Suetonius, we get him in Tacitus. They get his name wrong, they mangle him. Crestus, they call him, the mischievous followers of Crestus. and they think that they are Jews, which, you know, in a way, they're almost right. They get it as right as they're going to, given that, you know, they don't really give a shit about what happens somewhere else, not in Rome. But, you know, it's also, I agree with you that the Old Testament especially it is, in terms of storytelling, it is brilliant. It is a brilliant book of myth. But the New Testament, you know, you're on slightly thinner ice, I think, for literature.
Well, there's this historical guy, sure.
There's
not
very good history, I freely concede, but definitely he was there.
But then everybody that ever existed is a historical character.
But Gandalf isn't.
No, that's a good point. No, I'm definitely... an atheist on that.
I do think the error that possibly atheists make at times is to confuse belief in God with an actual belief in the Bible or the Torah or the Bhagavad Gita or the Quran or whatever else. That I think those are in some ways two separate things. People, we tend to sometimes attack the literalists because it's a little bit easy to go for the literalists.
And fun,
obviously. Obviously, you know, you believe this, you are nuts. But I think there is something else which goes back to, you know, the more fundamental truth, maybe an agnostic position or even a deist position. You don't get deists
anymore.
Did
you know there is
at some point a supernatural power? And most religious people I know will say, oh, you know, obviously I don't believe the whole lot of the Bible, the whole lot of the Quran, but I do think there's something out there.
Yeah, I think there's this. I would say that I am definitely an atheist in, and it probably is a belief. I think it is a belief position as well as, like, I like to think it's totally scientific, but there is a big part of my guts that just goes, no, it's silly. It's clearly obvious that there is no God, it's silly. And I think that's just that it's like a blick, it's a proper insurmountable belief of mine that I, for whatever reason, and for lots of reasons, have gone, oh, I was, as I say, I was brought up very religious, and I had a sort of conversion where I was just like, no, ridiculous, no. And it, now it is in my brain. And you don't have...
Do you mind me asking what religion you were brought up
in? I was CV.
Ah.
Yeah. And I loathed about it. But, yeah, so I think I am fundamentally different to you in my beliefs, because yeah. I don't even feel like it's not something we can know. I feel like I've seen photographs of the universe. Don't be so stupid. I've learned about physics. Don't be so stupid. Like, I genuinely believe in...
Yeah.
The random universe,
yeah.
And that's enough for me. That's the end cause for me. Like, I've reached the point where I don't need to ask any more questions.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, and I, so yeah, that is a bit stupid of me to give up. But I feel a bit like I'm satisfied that there isn't a God, and that's fine.
And but that's because it's based on evidence. Because you've looked at all the evidence.
Well, I haven't really looked. I've looked at
not
some.
All the evidence. Okay, nobody can look
I've
at all the
at
evidence.
Enough.
You wouldn't be able to, like, you don't have enough time in your life to look at all the evidence.
But the question here is that there's something people like, say, Terry Eagleton brought up, is that, you know, people like Richard Dawkins and Josie have looked at all the evidence for there not being a God.
Mm-hmm. But it's my own personal interest
and,
as well. I'm more interested in
yeah.
human beings, and I know I've only
yeah.
got one life, so I'm like, oh, God, shut up, it doesn't matter. No, just shut up,
but what someone like Eagleton would say is, well, that you haven't studied theology, you don't know enough about the evidence for there
yeah,
being
I'm
a God.
Yeah, I'm not really that bothered what Terry Eagleton says, to be honest. I've read a bit of his stuff, really. Makes
next
sense.
Week on Little Almonds, Terry Eagleton.
He's not, is he?
No.
Good. No, I was going to say that really, he, like A.C. Grayling and Richard Dawkins very eloquently put it, you don't need to have read the whole of the Iliad and the Odyssey to know that the Roman and the Greek gods are myths. You don't need to studied the whole of Hinduism to know that you don't believe in Vishnu or Lakshmi. So it's really...
I quite like Roman.
Oh yeah, I love it too, but you don't believe in it.
No, I don't, but I quite like them. I think they're as good as
me too.
They're not a bad one.
They're brilliant. I'm named after one of them,
so... Yeah, but that's exciting, isn't it? Anthropomorphic gods are fun.
Yeah, much more fun. I've been raised.
If you've been raised with Jason and the Argonauts as your sacred text, you'd be delighted.
I'd be constantly terrified of getting raped by an anthropomorphic god. That's what seems to happen quite a lot.
Not to you, to me.
It's very rapey, isn't it? Honestly, every 5 minutes he's like, oh, I fathered another god.
Oh,
how'd you do that?
I
was forced.
I just popped over it and.
I manifested myself as a swan.
Yeah.
I'm named after one of them. My mother had sex with a bull, Ariadne, the Minotaur. The Minotaur was my half brother.
Right.
Yeah, my boyfriend killed him and then fucked off. So you know,
it's nice to emulate that in your life.
I would
like
to.
It's always
that would be beautiful. But I think that
who are you named after, Natalie?
I'm named after my great grandmother, who was Belgian.
And there's no bulls.
No, but then my dad did want to call me Jocasta, but my mum intervened with the word no. You're not doing that. And you go, Dad, seriously, Jocasta, are you sure? It's pretty. Yes. And yet at the same time, she did inadvertently marry her son. Are you sure that's what you're doing? You know, now you've got the... So, yeah, lucky my mum is a woman of stern presence, or who knows what could have happened.
The next thing I want to move on to then is, as we're all writing and promoting a book about atheism, does atheism have an image problem in terms of how prominent atheists, who I think could remain nameless, Richard Dawkins, are coming for a lot of criticism in the way that he presents atheism, and do you think sort of should there even be a public face of atheism in that way? Do we have some sort of duty to proselytize? Is that, you know, atheism being like a non-position? You know, like it's the absence of a position rather than, you know, although people say it's another faith position, I don't agree with that.
I think it's completely necessary, absolutely necessary, to have a public face of atheism to counterbalance all the religious.
Reassure people a little bit.
See, I'm not bothered about so much about atheism having a public face, but secularism, I think, is
secularism.
Really, really important, because you kind of think, well, I would not construe myself godless, but I would certainly construe myself irreligious. And does it bother me when, you know, random people get to speak up as a spokesperson of their faith?
Yes,
of course it does.
Absolutely.
It's just, it bothers me that you can get a seat in the House of Lords. The House of Lords bothers me in a separate way, but it bothers me that you can just go, well, I believe in this person, I believe in this figure, I believe in this school of thought, so I get a say in how the rest of you are governed. What?
Well, no, very, very specifically, the House of Lords is I believe in this one way,
yeah,
this one person,
yeah.
I believe in this one thing.
Yeah.
And I believe in this one thing in this one very particular way.
Oh, but if you tokenistically believe in something and hang out with the right people, I think you can still get promoted.
I thought that was the definition of the Church of England.
Well, we've got 26 bishops, unelected bishops in the House of Lords. We have compulsory daily acts of worship,
mm-hmm,
in schools. We have abortion laws, which thankfully are not an election issue here, but which are often influenced by archbishops, for instance, saying things
crazy
to
religious
MPs.
Ladies.
Yeah. Crazy, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
she is.
We have MPs that are secretly crazy religious ladies.
Do you mean Nadine Dorries, or do you mean?
Well, I just meant that. I think I'm overreacting about my MP, but I was looking at my MP because I just moved to a new area and I like to check up on my MPs. And she seemed really cool, like, as cool as she could be, following the party lines, which was all right. Meg Hillier. And then I looked and she'd voted against an abortion thing, and I was a bit like, oh, Hillier, how are we ever to be friends?
Yeah.
You know, what is this? It's.
And you still need two separate doctors,
yeah,
to say that you're basically of unsound mind to be,
yeah,
able to have an abortion. I don't remember,
yeah,
anyone saying you had to do that for a nose job. That's a job for me.
It's absolutely ridiculous, but it's so weird because there's all aspects of the law, for instance. What's the idea of life being sacred, but that life is not actually life? So once the baby's born, they're not going to take care of it. You've got no religious organisations that want to, you know, help you to look after your kids or come round when it's turned blue in the middle of the night and, like, rock it to sleep when it's crying or anything of that. You know, it's just, like, have that kid, because that is, you know, from the moment of conception, that's been a child, and, you know, you're committing murder. I had an argument with Frank Skinner, where he said that, okay, short abortion, but call it what it is, call it killing a baby. And
oh,
I was like,
God.
Well, it's not killing a baby, so why would you call it that?
Those men do come out with those lines, isn't it?
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
That's a position where someone should be fully agnostic. They should be like, I can never experience this.
Yeah.
I can never understand it.
So
I must suspend judgment. It's like, is it René Descartes? He just kept going, I will suspend judgment from now on this issue. Like, you know, but I tell you what I think about this whole thing is, people are so into kind of imbuing words with too much personal meaning and too much, like, emotional meaning. So, you know, I hear agnostic and I'm like, oh, mate, you're mad, agnostic, oh, God. And to me, it's agnostic for some reason with the web of meaning.
Yeah.
It is almost like saying religious to me. I'm like, agnostic, you love God,
too,
you love God. It's not true. It's not the words for, it's just conversation and stupid media.
More people still did Greek at school.
Discourse.
More Latin and Greek at school, and these kind of mistakes wouldn't occur.
I didn't come out of the right financial level of womb to do that. I know, but
also, you're too young, I think.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. But and also, it was Latin or drama, so what was I going to pick?
Oh,
Latin,
so you did
drama
Latin
in Year 10, Latin or drama? Yeah, I'm not going to pick Latin over drama.
I totally picked Greek over German and something else, geography.
It's about how much the words get used for other things, and so it's quite nice to have an atheist. But I think maybe I'd be happy if it was said secular, because secular is such a lovely word to my mind, and it's so inclusive as well, because obviously atheist, you get people who bristle at that word because it seems too hateful. You know, atheist to many people means God hating, even though it doesn't mean that.
Yeah, it doesn't, and that's not the fault of the word either.
No, but of course it isn't, but like, it's nice to have some sort of presence that's inclusive. And so sometimes when people like Richard Dawkins are a bit like shouty, I'm like, oh, stop shouting. But other times it's a bit like, oh, thank God there is at least a team.
Thank God there's Richard Dawkins.
The great thing about secularism as well, if you describe it sort of like somebody like Dawkins, whose position seems to be often seems to be that, you know, I can't believe how stupid these people are.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, massively simplified. It is massively simplified.
Yeah,
his
book's longer than that.
Yeah. It's just the same thing repeated over and over again, if you've actually read it. But, yeah, the great thing about secularism is, you know, you can say, well, secularism is the, you know, the best way of protecting a plurality of religious belief. Surely, you
absolutely.
Know, only secular countries allow everybody to go about their own business and get on worshipping whatever bloody god they want to, surely.
I would take issue with, because, you know, there are probably two genuinely secular countries in the world.
Sweden.
No. Sweden people pay tithes to the church.
Oh my god, that's ruined.
But there's so many.
Lutherans have very good dinners.
There are two generally secular
countries.
Quakers have lovely
chocolate.
There's the United States and there's India.
Oh, yes.
And but they have very different approaches. The US, brilliantly, says, right, everybody go on with it. And, you know, your religion is what you think, what you want to, and that's fine. You can set up any kind of mental church you want. Just don't ask us to look after you. India does it very different. India is, again, a secular country, but it does the exact opposite approach in that it feels it is obliged to protect everybody's beliefs.
Yeah, sure.
So India was the first country to ban satanic verses, for example, despite the fact it, you know, it's not a Muslim majority country.
It's very worrying, isn't it?
But there is this, and you constantly get stories. I mean, when you're doing work for Index on Censorship, you constantly get stories out from India of, you know, local federal governments banning the most tiny irrelevant things. Sometimes the most tiny irrelevant things. Sometimes quite major things like MF Hussein exhibitions and things like that.
Yeah.
Because there is this kind of skewed, like, through the looking glass idea of secularism that everybody's belief must be absolutely protected. But I think apart from that, you know, what most countries mean when they say we are a secular state is that we are either openly, is it not even, it doesn't matter, it's that we are in fact anti-religious rather than freedom. So you look at Turkey, you look at France, these are countries which were founded pretty much in the Fifth Republic and the Emperor were founded on anti-religious sentiments.
You're listening to Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas with Padre Greedy and me, Neil Denny. And tonight we're talking to Ariane Shireen, Natalie Haynes and Josie Long about the launch of The Atheist Guide to Christmas.
The reason I didn't want to call it, well, I didn't actually think about calling it The Secularist Guide to Christmas. The reason that...
It wasn't a good title.
It wasn't. It was a rubbish title,
yeah,
wasn't
that's
it?
Not a
title. It was too long and it wouldn't have fitted in.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people don't know what secular means.
Mm-hmm.
And one person thought it was the instrument used for a smear test.
And that's speculum. See, again, not enough Latin in school. So we always come back to not enough Latin in school.
And that wasn't really the image that I wanted people to have in their heads when they looked at the book. Smear. Mm. So
that's so good for you.
That's so good for you. Maybe not something you want to purchase for your relatives.
But in a passive-aggressive way. See, I think we've missed a trick here, because I think the passive-aggressive gift is, in fact, did anyone write about this? This is what I should have written about. When you do another one, remind me, well, ask me, and then remind me to write about the passive-aggressive gift-giving thing, because that's what I think is underwritten about, underthought about with Christmas, where you have to buy a present for somebody who you don't like.
Yes.
Society dictates that you must.
Gillian Magini wrote that one.
Oh, excellent, there we go. An unwanted sister-in-law or brother-in-law or something like that, and you have to buy them something, and then how can you get something which will most successfully undermine their personality
so
and faith
mean.
In themselves?
That's
why
so
would
mean.
You want to do such a thing?
That's
malice!
Anyway.
your family is too happy. You have no idea what it's like.
I'm just incapable of malice. I just do kind of laziness rather than malice. So it's just like, yeah.
A friend of mine every single year gets bought clothes which are slightly too small by her
stepmother.
See?
Oh, that's
yeah, every year she buys her things
that's
that are a size
awful.
Or two sizes too small.
Is that you
that's
buying them for her?
No, I'm delighted to say I have no daughter-in-law or daughter
that's
or anything else. But
profoundly vicious.
Isn't it though? But this is what happens in the fragmented
family.
You wouldn't
God
know.
Well,
I bet she believes in God too.
Yeah.
And I bet she
no,
goes to church on Christmas Day and goes, well, I've done my duty, I've bought her a present, a lovely gift. I bet that's what happens.
Someone I know as well as I know myself
as like I've known them my entire life.
Yeah.
They last
A friend close to
me. Yeah, a friend massively close to me. That I'm in, like, it's like I'm inside their head the whole time.
A source.
Yeah, a source close to me. Yeah. They were really excited because for once they felt like one of their parents had made a big effort for Christmas. And then when they spoke to their sister, they discovered they had been bought the exact same present as their sister.
I had that.
No, it's not as bad as... I'm sorry to talk... Let me tell you one... The worst Christmas I ever have, which was the nail in the Christmas coffin, was I went to my mum, my dad and my stepmum's, and they bought me... and we opened our presents at the same time, and my step family had all got Nike tracksuits and trainers, which is expensive, and I got a Pet Shop Boys video with the price sticker still on it. It was £5.99.
Oh, yes.
And it said big value on it. And the reasoning was because I liked rock music.
So you'd obviously have the Pet Shop Boys.
I would prefer a Pet Shop Boys video though. I had an awful Christmas. Three Christmases ago, I had a new boyfriend, and he was it was all very exciting. I was quite happy, and he invited me to stay with his parents. And all my friends were like, "This is a good sign, you know, meeting parents." So I was all excited. It was awful. It was really awful. It was really bad. We were down there for like 5 days in Cornwall.
Oh, that's so long.
I had no phone reception, so I couldn't call my mates, and the only phone was in the living room. I didn't want to sit there going, "I'm having an awful time."
Yeah,
the whole family.
Just talking code.
Yeah, well, his mum would like yell at his dad. And his dad wouldn't do anything.
My parents are stupid.
Well, she used to yell at his dad, like, going, "You're so stupid, you're so stupid." Oh. And then his dad took it out on the dog and punched the dog in the face. He punched the dog in the face. And what was I meant to do? So
call the police. Go ahead and
the police.
Yeah, there's animal cruelty going on.
I don't think you can do that.
I'm inadvertently going out with somebody whose parents are evil.
I don't think you're allowed.
Say.
So I stomped out the room. I didn't want to create a bad atmosphere, but at the same time I sort of did. And then we all opened all the presents, and I was really excited because he'd got me...
badger baiting kit.
He'd got me like this jewellery and, you know, nice, lovely cashmere slippers and stuff like that. His sister opened hers, they're exactly the same size.
I was going out with someone, and I was in Vietnam, and I rang him on Christmas morning, and I was all alone on Christmas, and when I rang him, he said, "Oh, sorry, I'm busy, could you ring back in 2 hours? And I was like, "I've waited for 4 hours so that you'd be away." But then I dumped him, so it was good for me.
So that showed him.
Yeah.
I dumped his
victory again.
Good. Yeah. Otherwise,
at Christmas, did you dump him there and then?
Three months
later, because that's not really, that doesn't really count.
No, the last day, I think it was the 27th or 28th, I had the "it's not working" talk.
That's fair. On the train home.
I think, in fairness, you've got a pretty strong case, but you bought me the same presents as you bought your sister. It's a fairly strong case that's not working.
Your dad punched the dog, which I think would have been the clincher.
Well, he said that he didn't have much time to buy presents, so that's why you got us the same present. Secondly, his dad, while his dad may have punched the dog in the face, the dog, it didn't actually hurt the dog.
Oh,
the dog didn't feel it.
How does being punched in the face not hurt? That doesn't make any sense.
Don't know.
Well, that sounds to me like his dad punches like a girl.
Natalie, you're feminist. I'm shocked.
We're very quickly running out of time, so we should talk about, as this book is released on the 1st of October, and this today, when this Radio Show broadcast, is the 25th of September,
mm-hmm.
How can one go about purchasing this book between now and the 1st of October?
It is so important. I can't ask you enough. Please, please, please do go on Amazon and order the book this week, because it makes so much of a difference to how well the book does. Because we're in a recession, because publishers, well, bookstores aren't buying in that much stock, it will make all the difference if the pre-orders are really good. We need 5,000 people, 5,000 atheists, to buy the book this week to get it into the Sunday Times best Sellers charts.
Not just atheists, people who know atheists.
People
who know atheists. They might like
agnostics. Agnostics.
Yeah.
You can burn it as well. You can, surely, if you're religious, you can buy the book and you can
exactly.
burn it. That's fine.
Kindling.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a great big pile of them. Yeah.
You could buy
yeah.
this, you could take it to the, you know, the British Humanist Office and throw it through the window.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not going to condone
yeah,
that.
Burning a tree, a representative of a pagan Christmas. So
Stephen Green, Bonfire Night is coming up. You need these books.
And it would be brilliant to raise just as much as we raised for the Atheist Bus campaign
yeah.
for Terence Higgins Trust. And imagine getting this book into the top 10 bestsellers at the Sunday Times list. It would just be great. We'd have atheism up there. And
it would make the world better. Yeah.
Great.
I've got
it's a small way if we all bought this book. And
just the word atheist to some people is so powerful that it makes people forget what a warm and encouraging and fun book it is.
Well, there we are. It's the ultimate Christmas message. People coming together and enjoying themselves
and being nice.
But it is good.
Being
it's
nice
positive.
For
and
a good
I think
thing.
Lots of people who I think lots of people who are you know big fans of atheism, but also lots of its detractors will say. But the thing is, it's so negative. It's such
yeah.
a negative vision. We don't believe in this. We don't believe in that. We don't believe in this. Well, this is a whole book full of things that we do believe
yeah,
in.
Absolutely.
So you know, and maybe they're not. They may not be as profound as the things that the religious would claim to believe in, but they sure are important. And to us, I think
they
are profound. They're real lives and what
and
people really do. And, you know, if you want my vegetarian Christmas dinner recipes, I will be prepared to include those. I might write them in. Just a little gas mark on the side.
Oh, I'd like to say that Darren Brown also has a contribution in the book.
Yes.
And Richard Dawkins is writing his first piece of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. It's really unexpectedly hilarious.
It's really fun.
Simon Le Bon.
Simon Le Bon has come out as an atheist for the first time, which is very exciting. He's got lots of his fans saying they're no longer going to be his fans because he's been brave and courageous.
But he's probably gained a lot of fans.
Yeah, he's got whole new fans. Not
that's
you. You've been his fan for ages.
I have.
But Neil's now.
I'm going out tomorrow and buying all of their back catalogue.
Yeah. Excellent. And so you've got Darren Brown on kindness, you've got AC Grayling on how to have a happy Christmas, you've got Charlie Brooker on God's sense of humour, if God existed. You've got Ben Goldacre on the power of ideas and how they can change the world. You've got Lucy Porter on the best Christmas comedy. David Baddiel on all the best Christmas films and why aren't there any atheist films and his idea for an atheist film.
Sid Rodriguez
and Neil Denny and you've got
and Joe Salong and Natalie Haynes.
Absolutely.
So on that note, thank you for listening to Little Atoms. As Arian said, for all Little Atoms readers, it is important that this book is appreciated and is important that this book is bought. And even if you hate us, it's a very, very good cause. So, thank you.